This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. In 1979, musicologist Solomon Volkoff published a book called Testimony, which he claimed was an as-told-to memoir of Dmitri Shostakovich, who had died in 1975. The book caused a firestorm of controversy. Shostakovich had spent most of his life living in fear of the long arm of the Soviet authorities and their rules on what sort of music a Soviet composer should write. He had been condemned and then rehabilitated by dictator Joseph Stalin and his minions many times, but the world outside the Soviet Union never knew how to judge Shostakovich. Was he truly a victim of Stalin's bullying? Was his popular music just more Soviet propaganda? Or was he a secret subversive writing dissident messages in code into his music? This last claim was at the heart of Volkoff's book, and since Shostakovich was dead, there was no way to confirm or deny it. There still isn't. But Volkoff gave the music world a new way to listen to Shostakovich's music and a new set of criteria by which to judge it. Shostakovich's 10th Symphony is a case in point. He wrote it in the months after Stalin died in 1953, or, depending on whom you believe, he wrote it in 1951 and kept it hidden until after the dictator's death. According to Volkoff, Shostakovich told him, "I did depict Stalin in the 10th. I wrote it right after Stalin's death, and no one has yet guessed what the symphony is about. It's about Stalin and the Stalin years. The second part, the scherzo, is a musical portrait of Stalin, roughly speaking. Of course, there are many other things in it, but that's the basis." End quote. According to conductor Kurt Sonderling, who helped the composer prepare the work for performance, it was indeed a portrait of Stalin for all of us who had lived through the horrors of that time. But for the listener of today, it is perhaps more like a portrait of dictatorship in general, of a system of oppression. End quote. The first movement takes up almost half the length of the symphony in a mood of almost relentless sadness. The silence after the first two measures is just one of many stops and starts, as though uncertain of its direction. This opening grows into a long passage for the strings. The tempo begins to pick up, and a clarinet joins the strings. The full orchestra carries the melody forward to a crest, and the clarinet returns to quietly complete this opening episode. The tempo increases again, and the flute introduces a nervous new theme over plucked strings. The strings expand and contract this new theme, and when the texture has thinned to nearly nothing, bassoons, contrabassoon, and a softly rolling timpani begin the development section with a variation on the clarinet tune. Things begin to heat up, and the nervous flute tune returns, transformed. Shostakovich sustains this high level of tension with fierce interruptions from the percussion, fanning the flames even higher. The uncertainty of the movement's opening returns, but instead of stopping and starting, the music shifts from key to key before it finally quiets down for a recapitulation with the flute theme played by two clarinets. The texture thins again. The introductory music returns. And the movement peters out in a farewell full of reluctance and regret, played by two piccolos. Only one of which is left at the end. The second movement is the supposed portrait of Stalin, short, brutal, and to the point. It crashes across the musical landscape fast and furious. Like some kind of manic perpetual motion machine. This is by far the shortest movement of the symphony, and Shostakovich sets up the final explosion with a brief passage of quiet. Which makes the ending and its suggestion of barely suppressed rage even more sinister. The savagery of the Stalin movement is followed by a second, more leisurely scherzo, which begins with a rhythmically ambiguous ticking theme in the violins. This turns into a second theme which is expressive instead of dry and detached. Once the melody reaches the movement's home key of C minor, Shostakovich reveals another of the symphony's textual clues. He spells out his initials in musical notation, using the German transliteration of his name as well as German musical notation, where E flat is called S and B natural is called H. In other words, the sequence D, E flat, C, B spells D, S, C, H, Dmitri Shostakovich. He used this device many times, especially in his later works. A horn call changes the atmosphere. This mysterious summons will occur 11 more times in this movement, and each time it evokes an intensely serious response in the orchestra. The first time, it introduces a recollection of the symphony's opening measures. Which leads to one of the few passages of truly slow music in the middle of the symphony. The composer asserts himself with his DSCH motto. Which grows into a brutalized mashup of everything that has come before. But the last of the horn calls introduces a wispy, hesitant version of DSCH, played by flute and piccolo. And the movement ends on a ghostly note. The finale begins with slow music made up of two elements, a meditative theme for low strings, and a series of intense and expressive woodwind solos. But just as the movement seems about to lose itself in melancholy, the violins take off on a joyride. Occasionally interrupted by moments that are darker and sadder. DSCH steps forward again, forcefully portrayed by the horns and timpani. Another somber passage helps set up the coda. The woodwinds begin to pick up the pace, and the rush to the finish leads to an unexpectedly celebratory ending, with the composer's musical fingerprints all over it. Shostakovich's 10th Symphony was a huge success at its premiere, but some listeners were perplexed by its tone. Composer Dmitri Kabalevsky and violinist David Oistrakh came to its defense, but in somewhat general terms. I am deeply convinced that the conflict it portrays arises from the tension now existing throughout the world, declared Kabalevsky. Still, the Soviet Composers Union took a long look at the work, and Shostakovich was prepared to write another groveling apology. In the end, though, a more liberal faction of the union managed to craft a compromise position which was agreeable to all of its members, defining the piece in rather curious but very Russian terms as an optimistic tragedy. This is Rip Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.